Good afternoon and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I know what a newspaper editor does. I know what a newspaper reporter does. I know what the bureau chief does. But what does the president and publisher of a newspaper do?
Well, the president publisher is the overall leader for the organization. And particularly important to me as a president and publisher was the independence of the news operation. There's a distinct difference there. And so I would hire the editor, but philosophically it was important to me that the editor make the news decisions independent of the business side. So I had responsibility for the entire newspaper, and the editor focused strictly on gathering the news, getting it published, and that distinction is really important to me. So that the business interest of the newspaper, which are many, does not influence the news decisions that are being made.
Were you called into discussions of editorial policy? Were you called into discussions of questions of content and things of that nature?
Not specific content. Strategy, news strategy. We want to be a local newspaper. How much do we want to do regional, that sort of thing? I would participate in those overall strategic discussions, but not on content, not on news decisions. That was important to keep that separation.
Okay. Well, can I get you just move in a little bit closer to the microphone
Sure.
here as we continue our conversation with Larry Hansen, publisher emeritus of the Herald. I looked at your picture in the Everett High School yearbook.
Oh, my.
I went over to the Northwest Room and pulled it and looked at it. A lot of activities were listed on your underneath your picture, but there was no journalism in your high school career. Did you get a job with the Herald because you got a job, because it was a job, or did the job come because you wanted to be in newspaper?
No. When I graduated from high school, I wanted to become a history teacher. That was my motivation, and that's what I was going to study in school. But after I came back from the service, I needed to get... I'm the youngest of six in our family, and so I knew I had to work my way through college. And so I was looking for a job. All my friends had beat me to all the high-paying jobs at Weyerhaeuser and Scott Paper Company and Simpson Paper Company. So I was looking for a way to pay my way through school. And the newspaper messenger job was my opportunity to do that. And as I continued that process, I had a publisher as a mentor and a role model who saw potential in me to become a part of the newspaper business and gave me opportunities. So I just sort of evolved. I morphed into this interest. So when I got to the University of Washington, I changed my focus to business administration. I took a lot of journalism classes because I realized that I had the bug, the newspaper bug.
And so that would have been Robert Best, who
Yes.
was the publisher of the paper in the Best family published it for many,
Yes.
many years.
His father was the original publisher of the Herald in 1901. He came up from Tacoma, and then when he had a stroke and died, his mother, his wife, Gertrude Best, took over until she became ill, and then Robert Best, who was my mentor and the person who hired me, took over. He was publisher for 37 years.
Was your aspiration always to be newspaper management, or did you aspire to be a reporter, to be a Hildy Johnson in Everett?
Well, I straddled the fence for about 2 years, because at the time I came in, Brian Corcoran became the sports editor of the Herald. He later became a county commissioner. And Brian knew I was active in athletics and came to me and he said, I realize you're doing some of the sales work, but I'd like you to do some sports reporting for me. In those days, you could do both. Today, it probably wouldn't work. So I really was interested in the journalism, and so I was taking journalism classes at the university. But pretty soon, I realized that my real interest and focus was the overall management, responsibility.
And at that time, the money was probably better in management than being a reporter
as
well.
Yes, it was. Well, and also the technology was changing so dramatically. Computerization was beginning to come in, and photographic typesetting, and the whole business was beginning to change, and I had an opportunity to be a part of that change as the production manager at that time. So yes, I really realized that there had to be a break, a fork in the road, and so I decided I would put all my attention on business management.
Were there quiet moments on Sunday afternoons where you regretted that decision and wished you had stayed as a reporter?
Well, I tell you, the seats I had in the stadium were never as good as in the press box, that's for certain. But no, I really did fall in love with the overall leadership role, setting a kind of a tone and an atmosphere in the company. So no, I had no regrets.
So there was a fire that burned down the Herald building. They had to operate out of two buildings, and you were hired to be the messenger between the two buildings. What were you messaging, and was it on foot? Did you travel by bicycle?
Oh, no. That was the most intriguing part for me, because Mr. Best, the publisher, had just purchased a new Volkswagen Beetle. It had just come onto the market. And he realized he needed a messenger car, and so he gave me strict instructions how to take care of his baby, the VW Beetle. That was my messenger car. So, yes, I would drive in between the buildings, bringing copy, advertising material, whatever the various departments needed to operate. And then that began to expand. I said, you know, our advertisers are spread out in a larger area now. Wouldn't it be helpful if we would go pick up their advertising copy from them rather than expecting them to come into the plant? And so that's how that all evolved.
Long before faxes.
Oh, my, yes.
And
yes.
The fax came in and you were out of a job.
All the advertising material came to us from the various advertisers on the back of butcher paper and sacks, and we'd convert it into...
And how much did an ad cost in the Herald?
Oh, my goodness. A full-page ad was probably $50.
Judd and Black is rolling over right now.
Oh, my, yes, yes, yes.
And what was the price of the newspaper on the street at that time?
It was 25 cents.
25 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And today
it's not a big difference.
No, it's not
the
a big
same.
Difference at all.
Well, it went up to 35, and some went to 50, and then when the economy changed, it went back down to 25.
We're talking with Larry Hansen, publisher emeritus of the Herald newspaper, here on Sound Living this afternoon, and we invite you to join the conversation. You mentioned that you came back to Everett after doing a brief stint in the military. You graduated from high school in 1956. You were looking for a job. Boeing, of course, wasn't in Everett, but there was a Boeing plant down in Renton that had been turning out huge number of airplanes during the war. There was a lull at that time, but right about that time, Juan Tripp was nosing around Boeing about getting jets, the 707. Was working for Boeing not part of your plan? You wanted to stay in Everett?
Well, in fact, some of the most interesting aspects of my business management experience was learning Boeing's management style and its critical path planning process and so forth. There was some interest, but I had already kind of gotten the hook in my mouth on local newspaper. And so it was an easier... I loved being able to be at home in the area that I grew up. And one of the things I admired most about Mr. Best, my mentor, was that he believed in being involved in the community, and so he encouraged me to be a part of it as well. So I was becoming more and more involved with the Chamber of Commerce and other organizations, the United Way and that sort of thing. And so it became a natural lure for me to stay here. In the newspaper business, I had several opportunities to go elsewhere, but I really wanted to stay here and help my community grow.
Well, I want to explore that a little bit more, but I'm curious when you first time you sat down in the VW Beetle and became the messenger for the Herald, did you look at yourself in the mirror there in the car and say, you know, 55 years from now, I plan to still be at the Herald?
No. I didn't have that kind of vision. And what happened is each new challenge that Mr. Best gave me to lead a department, to create a new department, to bring in the new technology, the computerization and automatic typesetting and that sort of thing, just got me more interested and involved. And so I saw potential for growth within the organization, but I knew it was a family newspaper. It never entered my mind that I would become the publisher. I assumed it would be a Best family member. But that was before the Washington Post came into the picture.
Well, let me take you back to 1956. Here you come back to Everett. You graduated from Everett High School. You went into the military briefly. You six months active duty and then 7 years in reserve. But 1956, I mean, you had Marlon Brando's great movie that he put to the Wild Ones. You had James Dean doing the movies East of Eden. And
The Beatles were on their way.
The Beatles were on. Well, not 1956. I don't think they were around in 1956.
No,
but
no.
We did have Rebel Without a Cause, East of Eden, Marlon Brando. We did have rock and roll coming in. Elvis Presley was on the charts. Blackboard Jungle, the great movie with Rock Around the Clock. Why would you come back and say, I'm going to stay in little old podunk Everett, rather than the whole world is your oyster?
Well, my family was here. I had a new bride who was a nurse at Everett General Hospital. We began raising a family. My roots were here. But I saw tremendous excitement and potential in my career at the Herald. And it kept growing. I got to do more and more things, more challenging things, cutting-edge kinds of things. And so that bigger outside world was not a great attraction to me.
Well, tell me a little bit about Everett as you were growing up in Everett in the 1950s. What was going on in Everett when the rest of the world was exploding with rock and roll?
Well, Everett was very much a mill town. Weyerhaeuser had five mills here in Everett, and Simpson Paper Company, Scott Paper Company. This was before Boeing, of course, and so it was really a mill town. But it was dynamic in that it was a downtown. It was before the shopping centers came in. And so Everett was very much a downtown where all the stores were and all the shops were. It was a gathering place. It was a very exciting time. Cool. We had three movie theaters in Everett. That was pretty good.
What was it like being a teenager in Everett?
Well, it was wonderful. It was exciting. One of the things we were reminiscing with some of my friends not long ago was that one of the more thoughtful educators at Everett High School got the idea of creating a place called the Gull's Nest. It was a room on the top of a building on Hewitt Avenue, and they rented it, they purchased it, and created a place for high school kids to come and play. We could dance, we could shoot pool, we could visit in a very safe environment. It was a fun place to grow up. Athletics were a big part of our lives, and that continued even on after that with the junior college and the university.
And no sense of boredom for you
it was an exciting time. It was a very exciting time.
Of course, you had your siblings in the area as well.
Yes.
What did they go on to do? What did your siblings do?
Well, I was the baby of the family. My next older brother, Dick Hansen, became the principal of Everett High School. All of my family stayed here, each in their own vocations, and none of them moved away. They all found employment here. A couple worked for Scott Paper Company. My oldest brother was a building contractor. They all stayed here.
And so your roots is what held you here, even though the great white world, the wide world was out there calling to a lot of kids at that time.
A lot of my friends did go elsewhere. And it's interesting. Some of them came back later because they had done the big thing, and they wanted to come back home.
And we're talking with Larry Hansen, who is a publisher emeritus of the Herald newspaper. Herald newspaper is celebrating 109 years, and he has been with the newspaper for 55 years of those 109 years. Let's talk a little bit about the transition and how the transition came from the Best family to, of all people, Katharine Graham and the Washington Post. Because let's talk first about the newspaper under the Best family. Locally owned, locally published, locally managed. What was it like working for the Best family?
Well, it was very much a family business, and it was so focused on this community and making it better. It was an exciting place to work, and so Mr. Best was very active. In fact, commission, and when he had the foresight to go down and talk to Bill Boeing and convince him that new airplane, that jumbo jet they were thinking of making, should be made in Everett. And because he was the chairman of Airport Commission, Bill Boeing gave it consideration, and that's one of the primary reasons they moved here and started this incredible airplane business, which, thank God, is here, because this was no longer a mill town. It was the economics were changing. And thank goodness we had Boeing. And so it was that kind of an environment with the Best family, very much community-oriented. And when he died suddenly of a stroke in 1976, 77, it was a shock to everyone. And
was he a hands-on publisher? Did he get involved with the day-to-day decisions of what was going to go into the newspaper? Did you know what stories or what names perhaps shouldn't show up in the newspaper because he or she was friends with the Best family?
Well, fortunately, Mr. Best believed in the separation of church and state, as we call it. The church, the newsroom will quickly tell you that they're the church and the business side is the state. But no, he, like I later, was responsible for the editorial opinion, the editorial page, but not the news decisions. And so that came naturally as a separation. So it was embarrassing to some of his friends, the news coverage, but he was strong enough to stand up to it.
Would you, at that time, would you qualify or quantify or identify the paper as a Republican pro-business slant? Was it a Democratic progressive slant in the newspaper? How would you, at that time, characterize the newspaper, the Herald?
Well, Al Bennett was the editor at that time. A.M. Glassberg, who had been an editor for 40 years, had retired. And under Bob Best Sr., Al Bennett was the editor. And the answer to your question is the opinion side of the newspaper was very much more pro-business and maybe more Republican-leaning, but the news side was much more independent and even-handed. And that was the calling, is to write the stories more objectively, and as the leader of the organization, he empowered Al Bennett to make those independent decisions, which often were embarrassing to him with his friends.
Well, I remember many, many years ago reading a book by a reporter, Arnold de Borgrav, and the title of the book was Spike, and it was all about newspaper stories that had been spiked. They had been put on the spindle and not published because the word came down from on high that it would probably be in the best interest of the reporter or the editor not to publish that newspaper.
Well, I'm happy to say that didn't happen at the Everett Herald. I can give you one very vivid example. We published a story, and they notified Mr. Best ahead of time that the story was going to be published, that one of his good friends' son had been involved in a and was going to be indicted on a criminal charge. And the owner of that business, which represented almost 5% of our revenue, called and said, if that runs in the paper, I will cancel my advertising. And Mr. Best said, you have to do what you have to do. We have to do what we have to do. And we ran with the story once the person was charged. And indeed, he was good on his threat. And he pulled his advertising for one solid year until he realized he was advertising with us to get results, not to do us a favor, and he came back. But that was an example of how dynamic that could be.
And there were, around the water cooler, around the coffee pot, there were no discussions of, oh, you know, maybe we shouldn't put this in the paper because it might upset someone.
No. On the contrary, the conversation was, let's do what we need to do in the newsroom, and we'll support that decision.
For many, many years, Robert Best was the publisher. The Best family owned the newspaper. It was locally owned. It was locally produced. Robert Best knew everybody in town. And then comes the Washington Post, Katharine Graham. I can't think of an odder combination than Katharine Graham, the Washington Post, and the Herald newspaper. And I think the Herald is the only other newspaper that they own, is it not?
That's correct. That's correct.
So how did Katharine Graham and the Herald come to get linked together?
After Mr. Best died suddenly from his stroke, the family was caught in a very awkward position. Because the inheritance tax laws in those days were very punitive, and what they realized is that they couldn't survive and own it themselves. And so they began putting feelers out. And at that time, many larger newspapers were buying smaller newspapers.
This was when?
This was in 1979.
79, okay.
And throughout the country, family-owned newspapers were enlarged the highest percentage of newspaper ownership. But as each generation changed, the big newspaper chains began buying up the smaller newspapers, creating these large networks of newspapers. The Washington Post was reluctant to do that. They had their interest in Newsweek and cable television, but television broadcasting and so forth. But at the time the Herald became available for sale, many of the traditional New York Times, Chicago Tribune chains came, and it looked like they would be the obvious winners in this bidding process. But at the last minute, Katharine Graham decided that she would like to experiment with ownership of a smaller newspaper, and came and visited with Mrs. Best. And they hit it off really well when Katharine Graham explained that her philosophy was to allow a subsidiary to operate independently. And so Mrs. Best felt very comfortable knowing that in our community there would still be a local voice and a local involvement. And so she decided to go with the Washington Post, even though they were not the highest bidder.
Did things change in the newsroom? Did things change in the management offices when ownership and control moved from Everett to Washington, D.C.?
Well, they changed, but the ownership may have been in Washington, D.C., but decision-making was not. Katharine Graham and her son Don Graham felt strongly that the decision-making should be made at the local level. And that's why they chose one of their top managers, Chris Little, who had been the newsroom's attorney. His job was to keep Ben Bradley out of jail. And he was also head of the personnel for the Post. And he was the one who came to become publisher of the Herald. And it was his unique style, and that the philosophy of Katharine Graham, that the newspaper should be run from here. So they had confidence in him, and so they allowed him to make those decisions. So, yes, it did change. And one of the most exciting things for us was our ability to recruit talent increased dramatically. When we had openings for reporters and editors, we had tremendous choices. And the other thing that Chris did when he came here was he explored a Seattle bureau, and that made the Seattle Times and PI very nervous because they thought, uh-oh, so Katharine Graham's real reason for buying the Everett Herald was to establish a beachhead to launch a counter-competitive model.
Well, it was at about that time that the PI and the Times were beginning to talk about the idea of having a joint operating agreement.
Yes, it was.
Agreement.
It was about 1980, so it was right after the ownership change that the joint operation began being discussed. And so I think they were both a little nervous about that. That was never the intention, but what Chris Little brought was the idea of not just local news, but regional news was critical. Boeing was here. It was much more a regional look. And so he established a bureau in downtown Seattle, which again made the Times a little upset. Because we had news delivery down there or newsstands down there. But it was primarily to get regional news that would be of interest to our readers.
Would you say that was an experiment that didn't work?
That was an experiment that didn't work. In fact, when Chris was asked to take over the leadership at Newsweek, that's when I became publisher. Don Graham called me and said, I'd like you to come to Washington. There wasn't an interview process. He said, how would you like to become publisher of the newspaper you grew up in, the town you grew up in?
And at that time, what was your job? What were you doing at that time?
I was the executive vice president. Okay. So I had overall leadership for the business side.
Were there memos that came from Washington, D.C. saying that you've got to get your budget in line, you've got to make a better profit, the profit margin isn't high enough, you need to take some steps to control costs?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that usually translates into laying off reporters.
Well, it makes you refocus on your business strategy and your news strategy. In fact, shortly after Chris went back, one of the first things I did, and I was very candid with Don, I said, I don't think we have a reason to have a bureau in Seattle. We can send reporters in to Seattle to cover the news that's regional, and I closed that office. That was one of the first things I did. But, you know, the focus from the Washington Post was only on the business side. Yes, there was a profit target, and I had to develop business strategies. But I did our budgets over the phone with Don Graham. I didn't have to go back and sit at board meetings because they really believed that this, as long as we were getting the job done, getting the margins that they needed, that we were okay. So that was my focus, to make sure the business side was solid so that the newsroom could be independent. And so being owned by the Washington Post made it easy to recruit talent and into our newsroom and the rest of the newspaper. So net-net, for me, was a great advantage.
And the experiment to become a regional newspaper didn't work, and even today you are the newspaper is refocusing to become even more local.
It's
shifted again back to this concept of a local newspaper rather than trying to be a regional newspaper.
Well, that's our unique strength. Lots of people can do the regional, and many do the national, international, and now with the internet and multiple cable channels and so forth, our unique strength is local, and that, I think, is the reason we'll continue to be successful. We'll be different. The size of the paper has shifted. It's smaller. We're on the internet. There are different ways of doing it. But our fundamental strength is we have people right here on the ground that know this community better than anyone else and can do the job of reporting the news in a very objective way. And to have that freedom to be objective, to put some challenging things in the paper, I think serves this community really well.
In the 109 years history of the Herald, are there any Dewey defeat Truman moments that spring to mind where you really got it wrong?
You know, smaller versions of that, but no big ones. No big ones.
Smaller versions?
Well, you know, calling with the challenge of elections, that's always a challenge because the results are not in, and if you see the trend going strongly early on and you say so-and-so wins on the front page and it turns out they're not, that's very embarrassing. But no big ones, unfortunately.
No Dewey defeats Truman headline.
That's right.
Well, what stands out in your mind in the 55 years that you were there, the 109 years that the paper has been there, as their pinnacle? What in your mind is the acme of the job that the Herald is supposed to do?
Well, I think it's an everyday job. It's a job of being an accurate mirror for what's happening in the community. We've had some very dramatic trials and trial coverage, and of course the big events when Boeing rolls out a new airplane and that sort of thing. Those are the ones that you can look at and feel proud about. But I think our greatest accomplishments are the day-to-day accurate reporting of the news, letting our readers know exactly what's happening. And some of the news is not welcomed, but I think it's important. In fact, as we were talking earlier, I was just reminded that the real strength of the newspaper, and I think what I hope readers are confident about, is they know the source. They know that there are professional journalists doing the work, asking the hard questions, and are presenting not their views, but the news, what's actually happening. And I think that's really the key.
Well, when you started in the newspaper back in 1956, the linotype print machine was as big as a building.
That's right.
Now the articles are all written on a computer. They're emailed in and put into the newspaper. The newspaper is designed and printed on a computer. We're delivering it by the internet now. Do you see a time when people will no longer walk out to their front porch and pick up a newspaper and sit down at their table with their morning coffee and read it?
I think that's a long time off if it ever does happen. I think the volume is the question. Technology, the internet, has created a tougher business model for local newspapers. But it doesn't change, I think, in many ways, how people like to receive their news. The fact that it is available on the internet is very helpful. I mean, many people prefer to get it that way. But there is a large number of people who like the tactile feel. They like to be able to hold that newspaper and look at it, refer to it later. And so I think the printed page will be there for a very long time.
I wonder if that's a generational thing, because the what I guess we'd call them the Z generation now, picking up a newspaper is not part of their experience. They're going to go and they're going to have it downloaded onto their iBook or their eBook, and they're going to read it that way. So is it just you and me who grew up reading newspapers and walking out to the front porch and picking it up in the morning or in the afternoon that have that tactile experience that we want to maintain and would miss? But if you've never done it, it's not something that you're going to miss. And just have it downloaded every morning to my iBook, and I can look at it at my convenience. Do you think that's where it's going?
Well, I think it's heading in that direction. And yes, more and more people are comfortable with the technology. I often will call attention to my grandson, Derek, is graduating from Kamiak, or just graduated from Kamiak High School, and I'll tell him something of interest to him that I read in the paper. He said, "I saw it online this morning, Pops." Yes, that's very much the case. But I think what happens is, as people have families, their kids get more involved in the community and in activities, they're going to come more to the newspaper for information about what's happening in their neighborhoods, in their community, with their children, in sports and music and so forth, and they can find that in the newspaper, whether they get it online. But I think still there will be enough of a percentage who like to have that in their hand, and that will continue to be for many years.
Would you like to be starting out in the newspaper industry today, or are you glad that you did it when you did it?
Well, you know, I think I would like the challenge to do it. It was exciting, and part of when I came in, it was more of a romantic time, the linotype machines, you know, and the very difficult, almost like giving birth experience of making a newspaper. Now it's computerized, but that's a wonderful talent, it's a wonderful tool for us to have to get information in people's hands quicker. So, you know, I would relish the opportunity to do that. And I watch my colleagues now to do that. And they are, you have to look at different business models. A couple recent examples, you know, the Herald is publishing a Spanish-speaking newspaper called La Raza,
mm-hmm.
and it's doing very well. Just last Sunday, the Herald began printing USA Today for Alaska, British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho with that beautiful printing press we have. So there are other ways to generate revenue to help support the news function. It surely more and more will be online, but I'm not giving up on the printed word yet.
Mr. Hampton, I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming in and being a guest.
My pleasure.